They're late.
I'm sorry we had a small mishap.
Here are the keys. Here are ours.
Have a nice stay at Milbar.
You in our city.
Still telling the same story, Josh?
Powers of evil are very strong here. I must leave.
Goblins don't exist. Goblins don't exist.
And remember.
So dizzy.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We are part of the Main Dammy Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindammy.com or on Twitter and Facebook at themaindammy. Welcome back to episode 2 of our horror-themed episodes for They Call This a Movie while we're here in October. This is Anthony DelVecchio, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Myers. Say hello, gentlemen.
Yo.
Hello. Yeah.
How are you guys doing?
Good. Good. I was thinking of doing my introduction in the theme of this movie with the antagonist announcing herself with her whole three name, you know, every time she walked on the screen.
But, yeah. I don't think anybody would have gotten it.
No, nobody would have gotten it, and my name doesn't have the same amount of different syllables that hers does. So it wouldn't have worked out, but just letting the audience know that I did have a bit planned.
All right. Well, that was Mark's bit, was explaining the bit that he didn't do.
Yep. Classic.
Yeah. That old bit. So, yeah, we're here. This is our second episode of Halloween, 31 Days of Horror. We are here in October. Last time we did Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And this week we're doing one almost as infamous, if not even more infamous, than Killer Clowns from Outer Space. It is the 1990 film known as Troll 2. Now, apparently, one Mr. Dan Aquino has never seen this movie before.
No, our first viewing was the first time I'd ever seen it.
And what'd you think?
There was a lot going against it. being that it was, 3 o'clock in the morning when we watched it?
Mm-hmm.
That didn't help. I don't want to get too into it in the opening segment here. There's a lot to discuss, but yeah. I guess it lived up to the hype.
Okay.
How do you see it?
And Mark, what's your experience with Troll 2?
I had never seen it either, but I had heard, talk about it, comparing it to the horror version of The Room, which got me completely excited, because that is... The Room, in terms of rewatchability of movies for me, is definitely in the top 10. So, I was like, oh, there's a horror movie version of something I can stupidly put on in the background and laugh at. It's got to be amazing. And as Dan said, it was every bit as good. And some parts of it made me want to pull my hair out, while other parts just made me laugh out loud. But yeah, we'll get more into that after, I guess, we go through the recap.
Yeah. So Troll 2, I've seen, this is probably my third time seeing it. I'd actually watched it in the beginning of this month when I found out it was on Amazon Prime.
You've done it two more times intentionally?
Yeah, on purpose. And I think seen Best Worst Movie twice. This movie is hilarious to me.
Yes.
And I think Grandpa Seth is the best part.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. That's pretty much the only character that I remember.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could get right into plot. I rolled through last time. So, Mark, why don't you give us a brief synopsis of Troll 2?
Yeah, so Troll 2 opens up with, like, every great horror movie should be, an old man reading an inappropriate scary story to a young boy at night. He's going through this fantasy tale, and then about a man who gets lost in the woods and chased by goblins, and then the goblins finally track him down, knock him out, but then he is saved by a beautiful young lady. She forces him to drink something, and then that is when you find out that the trolls can shapeshift, and the beautiful young lady was a goblin. They don't even call them trolls in Troll 2. You know, he doesn't even have the happy ending for the grandson, he says that the adventurer gets torn to pieces and eaten. And at this point is when we find out the grandpa says that goblins are real. I'm going to do that a bunch throughout this recap. That, you know, you got to be on the lookout for them. They can be anywhere. And then the mother opens the door, and then you find out that the grandfather is not really there.
Quick question. So, do you know why there are no trolls in Troll 2?
No idea. Did they?
Is that a copyright thing?
No, it was literally, this movie was going to be called Goblins, and then there was a movie that existed called Troll, and they decided to turn it into a sequel.
Oh, okay.
The first movie does have trolls in it.
But this had nothing to do with the first movie.
Literally had nothing to do with the first movie.
Oh, that's confusing.
That's a running theme with this movie.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. I don't know, was Troll that great that he thought naming it Troll 2 would give him more money?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Troll 2 technically isn't a sequel to that 1986 movie. In fact, the film has nothing to do with the other. So, they don't have anything to do with one another.
Okay.
It's supposed to be called Goblin.
Which would make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
So then we find out that the grandfather's dead, and the, you know, and for some reason, the mother kind of, instead of, or at least I read into it as listening, doesn't so much comfort the son as scold him for saying that it was as hard on everybody else as it on him, and he needs to just shut up about the grandfather. Which I guess they were trying to make sound a little more softer than it did. But that happens a lot throughout this movie. Finally gets, you know, to go to sleep, and then we cut into, you know, she walks into the daughter who is doing bench presses for listening to, as my caption said, pop music. We got her, and she has very, like, jazzercise outfit on. For some reason, the mother just shakes her head and then walks away. So I don't know what that introduction was meant to be. And then she goes downstairs. You know, you find out that they're going on vacation. You see all the bags packed. Talks to the husband and tells him about seeing the grandfather and goes through the whole thing. And then she just asks them, who are the goblins? Which seems the most out of blue question you could ask, and they don't even resolve it. They kind of use that as a cut to, I believe, the boyfriend and his pack of friends, which
his
I wonder.
Obsession with his friends.
Yeah, yeah. Which I wonder if in the back of the mind, the writer of this movie may have been trying to do a similar three, you know, person situation to like 16 Candles with Anthony Michael Hall and, you know, the two goobers with him in that moment.
Say goobers?
Yeah, goobers.
Yeah. Mark is breaking out the very salty language today.
Yes, goobers.
The one thing about the mom, the actress that plays the mom, she's got lifeless eyes.
Yes.
She is completely dead behind those eyes, is what I remember from watching this.
She's literally insane, I think. And you brought it up when we were watching it, Ant. Like,
yeah.
No one in this movie is a good actor, but she portrays crazy very well. And yeah. You're saying, yeah, I think she might have just been crazy.
Yeah, I think that's touched upon in Best Worst Movie. Not that she's crazy, but there are like excerpts from like interviews with her, and it's just like she's not 100% there. Like she seems like she's had like some sort of mental health issues in the past.
Yeah.
It stinks, but I guess for the movie, it helped.
Yeah, when the movie started picking up, yes. But for the scenes especially, that explains a little bit why the emotional moment with the son didn't come off as I guess they intended it to.
Mm-hmm.
In the bed, because there was nothing there. And then basically, you know, the guy is with the friends, and you know, they throw the ladder up, classic 80s style, that obviously nobody downstairs would hear a giant ladder hitting the wall. And they go up the ladder to go into the daughter's room. Her name is Holly, as we find out. And he does that lean over thing when somebody's bench pressing, to kind of scare them a little bit. And then, which starts the most improbable plot thread of this movie, where it makes absolutely no sense. They get into an argument about, you know, it's either me or your friends. And every time he keeps going, yeah, I'll choose you, and then saying the father hates him, but if you show up tomorrow, my father will like you. And
he's going to chop his balls off and eat them.
Yeah.
His little balls off.
Oh, and eat them. And needless to say, I, you know, I guess this was supposed to be like a cute lover's fight or whatever. And it just comes off as somebody that hasn't really been in a relationship too much.
Ever.
Or ever. You know, just the way they interacted and, you know, the way there was no, like, on both ends. I'm like, why are either one of these people interested in the other? Like, at all.
Yeah, that never happened to me when I was courting my wife.
Yeah.
If you don't show up, my dad will rip your balls off.
And eat them.
Yeah. But if you do, he will really like you.
Right.
He's a 0 to 60 guy.
I lucked out in that department.
So we jump cut, I believe, to them driving away in the van, and lo and behold, the boyfriend never showed up. So she's all mad that the father didn't wait for him. He said, well, he should have been on time, and then they fight about, you know, him dating him, them dating, and, you know, and he reiterates the line, well, I hate him, there's nothing good about him. And then we go into a transition into a dream sequence with the little brother in the back seat, where he dreams that he is about to be eaten by goblins, and then he wakes up screaming. And none of them seem completely worried about it. They just ask him, are you okay? And she said, and the sister says, are you dreaming, little brother? I believe is the exact line. And he goes, oh, yeah. And then they just move on from that. And then we once again meet. I don't know if the series of events for this, if either you find out that the boyfriend's in the Winnebago, driving behind them, or if they find the hitchhiker. Either way, one of those two things pop up next. So you find out that we'll go with the boyfriend first, because that's the dumbest one. Is following behind them to catch up in a Winnebago with his three friends. And he's gotten them to come along because he promised them you know, loose women in the town they're going to. And
right, I forgot about that.
And that's how, you know, they're going to have so much sex when they get to this town. And then it cuts to the little boy, I guess, is going to the bathroom on the side of the road. And, you know, hitchhiker walks over, or someone walks over, and it's, he sees it as the grandpa. Again, he starts talking. And then, when the family opens the door to let him back in, the facade fades, and it's this hitchhiker who wanted to be picked up and driven, into town. And they just awkwardly leave without really even, like, screaming, like, get the hell in here before that hitchhiker takes you. Sort of thing. It's sort of like just a calm, come on.
Or they're like mildly annoyed by it. Hey, are you coming or what?
Can we go back to the whole promise of there being available young women in the town of Nilbog?
Yes.
Which was completely not based in any sort of reality. If it's such a small town, why are you be like, you know?
Yeah, it's not on a beach or anything, you know, it's
yeah, it just
a town called Nilbog usually doesn't scream hot chicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seemed like they went one way, like, oh, these are horny teens. You know, why would horny teens follow their friend to the middle of nowhere? Well, he's going to promise them lots of sex with women. Okay, got it. We can not worry about that now. And move on to the rest of this beautiful plot. And then, you know, at this point, you know, for some reason, I still don't know if the Winnebago broke down or ran out of gas or they just pulled over.
It's never really mentioned.
They kind of just set up camp there for some reason.
Yeah, and they call off to her as she drives by Holly and she flips them off. And apparently only the boyfriend sees that and not the other three that are standing directly next to him.
Well, based on the shots, no one should have seen it.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But, you know, if we're going to suspend disbelief for a second that he saw it, there was all three of them were standing right next to him. So unless if he has the eyesight of an eagle, you know, they all should have seen that.
And how did they beat them there?
That's true, too.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know.
They left late.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'd think they would have passed them on the road at one point.
Yeah. Or it's thought to meant that they left on time, but he went in the Winnebago with his friends instead of going with the father.
Possibly,
but we're giving it too much credit. Where they just want to have a scene where Holly flips off the boyfriend, and that was the whole reason behind that. There's nothing thought.
But by the way, I think the friends of the boyfriend.
Yeah,
I think they're better than anyone else in the family. Really,
yeah.
They lead to some of the funniest scenes in the movies.
Yeah. Yeah. The two of the three of them have some really great scenes coming up, which we'll get to it, but just one of them is completely improbable in the sense that is not
one of them.
That's obviously all improbable, but I'm just saying we'll get to it, but
the first and the third friend.
Yes. Yeah, both have very improbable things, but...
Are very good.
The third friend's scene makes him seem like a complete moron. Sense that he says he loves a certain food, but has no idea how it's made. anyway, they finally get into town. Drive in, for some reason pull over. Again... It was completely because they set this scene here so that when they drove away, you could see the people inside the general store. Like, there's absolutely no reason for them to stop and pull over at this point. So you get to see that there's only a limited amount of people in this empty town, and they're all inside the general store. And they pull up to the farmhouse, and the family looks very, you know, horror movie, backwoods family, sort of, you know, stoic and... You know, not anything weird going on with them at all. They're just normal country folk, as the family would want you to believe. And then as they zoom in, I guess to drive it in early, even though it doesn't really come up again for a long time in the movie, that they all have a scar that looks like a clover leaf in their body, either on their head or somewhere else. And
the first tie into Silver Shamrock.
Yeah.
From Halloween 3.
Yeah. They're just sort of trying to show you, foreshadow something, but kind of beat you over the head with it and make it pretty obvious. Again, nuance is not the best thing for this writer. So as they're, I guess, exchanging houses, which I don't even know if that's a thing. Maybe it was in the early 90s.
I believe it's the plot of the Christmas movie The Holiday, starring Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz.
Okay. So they took that from Troll 2. Got it.
Exactly.
The little boy throws the other, you know, the two little boys exchange a glare, and you know he's an evil little boy because he has a Jeff cap on, and he tosses a softball to him, and it wrote on it, I believe the line is "Eat before we eat you,"
something like that.
Yeah, which is weird. Again, you know. You don't really need to reiterate to this kid that, you know, about the goblin thing, but they keep hammering it home.
One of my favorite parts of the movie is coming up.
Yeah, so.
And Ant can attest to this. I called it. Yeah. I never saw it before. Keep going.
Yeah, so they go inside the house, and they're like, oh, I wonder if there's food there. And they get to the table. And there's all this food out that has all this, you know, not, you know, I guess not supposed to be obvious green frosting or something all over everything, including the corn on the cob, which seems to have a line of green butter on it.
Yeah.
I guess it's to establish that the green is bad. And so, you know, they're all about to eat and get ready, and then it freezes time, and the grandfather comes back and says, you have to stop them. They can't eat. You got to stop them from eating. And so the little boy, while time is frozen, and he's in his Zach Morris world, walks around the table and tries to figure out what to do, and then apparently you're only told he does this. He starts unbuckling his pants, and then all of a sudden they're like, ugh, and they're throwing out all the food. So you're assuming that he whipped it out and pissed all over the food.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate that watching this movie at Anthony's, when that part comes up and he's trying to figure out what do I do? And I was like, he's just going to whip it out. And he goes, unzips his fly. This is great. One of my favorite movies now. it like delved into my, it went into the future, saw my mind. This is what has to happen now.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, why is that his plan?
Right. Instead of like throwing all the food out or. Well, he first of all, he takes a sweet time with the 30 seconds he has.
Yeah.
And Grandpa Seth, you have 30 seconds to tell them to stop eating the food. And he kind of walks around for 20 of the seconds. What should I do? And throw it out. Do anything other than pee on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And my two favorite parts about that, which it comes up later in the movie, is that they actually run it in real time when they say, you know, you have a certain amount of time to do something. He did just about 30 seconds of deciding. And the other thing is, if we're going to assume that he destroyed all the food, it means that he pissed on his family members as well. as they were all holding right some kind of food. Yeah, right in her mouth.
Well, it's a good thing he had to go, and he must have had a lot, because there was a lot of food on that table.
Yeah. I would assume you don't have to get a whole lot of piss on something to not want to eat it, so.
That's true. Depends on how poor you are.
Yeah.
The family takes it very well. I mean, they punish him, obviously, the dad, you know, the next shot brings him up to the room. You're going to be hungry, I guess.
Yeah, and this scene had one of my favorite moments in it, is when he takes the son upstairs, you know, and the mother just yells, "Don't hit him, don't hit him." So apparently insinuating that his father abuses his son.
Pretty strongly implied.
So he gets upstairs, and then, you know, he throws him in bed, and then goes for his belt, which you're thinking, oh, he's going to take off the belt to hit him. And he goes, "No, I'm just tightening my belt because we're going to go on a hunger strike."
I've never heard that before.
Tightening my belt by two loops so I don't feel hunger pains. And your mother and sister will have to do the same.
I don't even think the other two wear belts.
And then he goes on to this long monologue about how he starved when he was a child.
That's right. And it's never brought up again in the film.
No, like a lot of things.
This is also the part where the very famous line of, "You don't piss on hospitality."
Yeah.
"I won't allow it."
One of the best lines in the movie.
Which is very literal.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing to think about, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Don't piss on hospitality.
It should be a t-shirt if there's not already one.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
It's definitely at the Jersey Shore, at least at this point when the movie came out.
Maybe.
I believe at this point is when we cut to the boyfriend and his friends, I believe. And this is where friend one has his moment to shine?
More than that.
And he chases after the girl that is just, you know, random woman running in the woods. And so he goes and chases her down because I don't know if you're supposed to think that he wants to help her or if he thinks that catching her, catching up to her and slowing her down might mean she'll have sex with him.
Well, because he thinks he steps out of the Winnebago and he sees the woman in the woods.
Yeah.
And I think he says something along the lines like, "Oh, finally, a woman or something, like a girl." So he chases after her in hopes of, I guess, bringing her back or finding out if there's more women available. But he does it very creepy. Like, he tackles her.
And he kind of like holds her down a little bit.
Yeah, that's not how you get it done, my friend.
Because his head landed in her breast area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I think he caught the feel.
Yeah, he was kind of like just going to stay here a little bit, you're going to stay down. And he pops up, and then all of a sudden, she's screaming and turns around, and you see just a pack of goblins are there.
Or trolls.
Or trolls. They should be trolls, but
they're
goblins in this movie. And then he gets all, again, probably thinking if he does this, he'll end up, scoring with her. He goes and he's all tough with the goblins and telling them to leave him alone, you little people, things, or whatever, marches around and, like, taps them on the shoulder.
He tells them he's going to have to get rough with them if he doesn't leave them alone.
Yeah.
It leads to my next favorite part of the movie.
And then all of a sudden they launch
a spear,
which is basically a tree branch, at him. And it slides into his shoulder, and he screams. And apparently this was enough for the goblins, because, none of them came to get a second attack on him.
You're thinking too much in D&D terms.
I love the sound effects and the special effects with the spear. Because one of them just, you see the shot, it hucks the spear. There's a shot of the spear flying through the air. and all of a sudden just like winds up in the guy's shoulder and is like, ah! I love that scene so much.
And then the girl comes over and pulls the spear out of his shoulder, and then they run off, and they eventually find a church, which I think the girl assumes is a abandoned house.
He calls it a house. Let's hide out in this house.
Yeah. And for some reason, this is the scene where the, if I get my camera terms wrong, Anne can correct me, but he decides to do some weird Dutch angle of the church that is never really does a shot like that again. So I don't know what the plan was for that. And it sits there, the camera, as they slowly walk up the steps and into the church. And when you walk in there, it is like the most obvious set that looks nothing like the outside in shape or anything. And for some reason, they don't seem perturbed by the house. They're just kind of like, huh, stuff in here. And then...
Like a greenhouse almost.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And they're just like, oh, it's just random. And then we're introduced to, I guess, the evil druid of the thing.
I think she's a witch or like a
witch
goblin
or
queen.
Something. She's a queen, for sure, because they say that at the end.
Yeah, the goblin queen, I believe.
Yeah.
Or that's what she's credited as.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and then she introduces herself, which was part of my non-bit at the beginning, in her three names. I'll probably screw up the third one, but, you know, and she does it really theatrically, you know, as Credence, Lenore, and I believe that's Gyrgud.
Gyrgud.
Yeah, and as though you're supposed to know that name when she says it, and that she is descendant of the people of Stonehenge, which comes out of nowhere.
She has a piece of Stonehenge in the...
You make that connection later.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so that comes out of nowhere, and then, you're inside a... basically looks like a witch's house, and she gives you a nondescript brew of some kind, and they're just like, yeah, sure, let me drink this, especially the girl that seems to have already been poisoned. Just drinks it. She's eaten or drank something at some point that has made her feel this way, so she's trusting again. And then that's when the two odd things happen in that place, where all of a sudden she gets sick, vomits, and then just sort of does this really theatrical death spiral that includes hitting the wall and then going up the spiral staircase, and then finally collapsing to a spot that they could replace her with the jello-filled dummy as she became plant food.
She dissolves into plant food.
Yeah, for the goblins to eat. And then, for some reason, he gets frozen in place for... I don't know if we're supposed to assume the queen did something, or... Because he didn't drink the drink, as far as I could tell.
I thought he does.
He does? Okay.
No. What winds up happening is he gets frozen in place... And then I think he drinks it, though. The next shot is him just kind of...
In the flower pot.
Yeah, in plant mode.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that this movie has some goofs?
Goofs in it?
I would imagine it does.
I'm assuming we're supposed... my assumption is mine trying to fill in the blanks... is that we're supposed to assume that she casts a spell on him when he doesn't drink the potion.
Oh, let's go with that.
Yeah. But she never makes a hand motion or anything. But I'm assuming that's what you're supposed to think. So anyway, you know, try to speed this up a little bit. You know, now he becomes a plant, the other one dies. Go back to the house, we find out there's no food in the house, except for all this spoiled milk.
You skipped over the best part of the movie. Like the most quoted part of the movie. When the woman dissolves into plant food and the goblins come out and consume her, what does he say, Anthony?
I'm going to leave this one up to you, Dan. You take it away. This is your favorite part.
So this was something that I had seen plenty of times before watching this movie, so I was very much anticipating actually seeing, witnessing this part of the movie.
Exactly.
So as he's frozen by the Goblin Queen spell or fear or whatever, they don't explain it, he looks up and just the way he reads this line is brilliant. He looks up and he says, "They're eating her, and then they're going to eat me. Oh my God." And then it just kind of cuts away.
The zoom in.
Yeah.
The read, I don't know how many takes they took of that line.
Probably one.
But if it was any more, if that was the best one out of everything they took, that's so sad.
I want to see the other ones.
Right, that's what I would love to see, the blooper reel of this movie.
Yeah.
But there's no way that could have been the best take of that.
Yeah, there's a moment coming up that I think was they had to keep that shot in, and it's clearly a blooper later near the end of the movie. I don't know if anybody else noticed it, but
there's so many.
Yeah, there's so like I said, looking at the time, going to speed it up a little bit. There's so much to talk about in this movie. So I believe we cut back to the family, find out there's no food in the house except for spoiled milk. So the father-son decide to go to the general store to get some food. The wife and daughter stay home at this point. And then the next thing, you cut to the second friend who decided to go for a run for some reason, I guess to go get food.
Yeah, he was going on a food run.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally a food run.
Yep.
And then he gets pulled over by the law.
Sure.
As it comes up. And, you know, goes and to get driven into town so he doesn't have to run anymore, you know, since he's not training, as he's asked. And then the sheriff hands him a bagel that has, like, green cream cheese on it. Which, again, why these people assume that, you know, anything with green food coloring or anything is like, oh, yeah, this is great. Why am I not, you know, disgusted by this? And then also in this scene, you notice that the guy really didn't want to eat it. There are a couple times where they cut and you could see it was still a full bagel. Like he was kind of just miming eating the bagel. The kid does this later too, where I don't know if the food was just fake or disgusting.
Stale.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so they get to the general store and the kid starts sweating green, which I guess the girl had this earlier, which I guess is your touch that they got poisoned. And are slowly turning into plant food. Why nobody would freak the hell out when they wipe their forehead and they have green substance on their body is beyond me. But you find out that they don't have any other food except for, you know, I guess some vegetables and milk, which is free. You can take the milk with you. Some Nilbog milk.
Make sure all your friends have some too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess this is the point where we find out that the goblins are, I guess, only plant eaters. Because anytime he mentions some kind of meat, the guy behind the counter gets really mad. And he's just like, ugh, ew. You know, like bacon.
Yeah.
Like, sort of, like, weird way of introducing that part of the whole bit. And so he gets the milk, And then he goes running back with nothing else in hand, just the milk.
Just the milk, yeah. You know? Food run, not very successful.
Nope, just getting the milk. So he goes running back, and then for some reason during a run, he decides, oh, you know, it'd be a great idea to drink now? Milk.
Yeah.
And he takes a drink of milk at some point.
At this point, if we edited the podcast, you would put in milk was a bad choice from Anchorman.
Yeah, yep, yep.
But yep. I don't, so it won't be.
Yeah. And then two different things go on, which can be really shortened. The girlfriend goes down and confronts, the boyfriend. They have a little fight. She punches him in the face.
She socks him real good.
And then also they go on their food run, the father and son, and find out the general store is closed for 20 minutes for the sermon. And then the boy sneaks away while the father falls asleep, reading the vegetable, how to cook vegetables book, outside the general store.
Forgot about that.
And this is the point where the little boy tries to call the grandfather through the mirror. I skipped over the whole part where he appeared to the daughter and she freaked out.
Yeah, through the mirror. Throughout the movie, Joshua, the son,
he
has a spiritual connection to Grandpa Seth, and he's able to call upon him at random times, and he kind of shows up like the Wizard of Oz style.
Yeah.
Just giant head.
Yeah, so he's calling out to him in the car, and he doesn't really come to him, but this is the point where he looks into the thing, the rearview mirror, or side mirror, and he gets a shot of the sign for the town, which just literally looks like they posted up this wood thing on top of an actual street sign in whatever town they were filming in, because there are still actual street names below it. And the little boy comes to the realization that Nilbog backwards is Goblin, and this is their kingdom.
Not too quick on the uptake.
No.
These people.
Yeah. To be fair, he never saw it written down, so I can excuse Joshua. You know, you would think I guess the father strongly was against anything Grandpa Seth said, so he would have never made the connection.
Yeah, they hated him for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, Grandpa is an old coot.
Yeah, he told all those goblin stories. And this is where Joshua goes into where the sermon's taking place, and the whole sermon is against how bad meat is, and how, I guess, smelly and bad it is.
Rots the insides.
Yeah, right, you know, all that, like, doing a testimony for meat being terrible in the form of a preacher-style sermon with the, speech and recall sort of thing going on. And then, obviously, just for this scene, the little boy has a skateboard.
Yeah.
You know, just so he could, make noise. Is when you find out that the family that was supposed to leave is still in town because they're at this sermon. And then when they catch the little boy, because apparently the preacher puts his hand through the ceiling and grabs him by the face and pulls him down, they're going to force feed him ice cream.
That's right.
Because every little boy wants ice cream. No, sorry. Excuse me. He starts screaming and the father hears him, runs in, saves him, but not really freaked out by this completely.
No, not at all. Yeah, he's like, what are you doing? Like, oh, we were just going to give the kid some ice cream. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So that excuses the bloody murder he was screaming.
Yeah.
And then that's when he sees the family supposed to leave and he goes, oh, why didn't you guys leave? And he's like, oh, car trouble. We're leaving tonight. And the father completely buys it. And he's just like, oh, okay.
Another simple man.
Another great read, by the way, from that family. We had car trouble. We are leaving tonight.
Yeah. And then it cuts back to the to, I think, friend number two. Oh, he was told to go to the church, to meet friend number one.
Yes.
So, he goes there and he finds friend number one as a potted plant, which we are introduced to when the witch, you know, starts watering him and then says that she's going to bring a pie to the new neighbor.
I love the half-assed escape attempt or the rescue attempt that friend number two gives to friend number the potted plant.
Yeah.
So he asks like, "Get me out of here! Get me out of here!" So, what do you think you would actually do in that situation? Maybe try to pick him up, get him out of the pot. And friend number two decides he's going to drag the pot, the pot of dirt with him in it, all the way across the floor, and he gets maybe 3-4 feet before he just, like, "I can't do this. This is too hard."
Yeah.
These guys are not very bright.
Yeah. And also, what happens when he gets to the steps? Is he just going to let him fall, or is he going to do each individual step?
Well, yeah. What he, then, after that, what do you do? Drag him all the way back to the Winnebago?
And then take him home as a potted plant?
It would take you all day.
Yeah. Yeah, so, so at this point, I don't think we see him again. I think at this point he gets knocked out onto the bed, and then she pulls out her chainsaw and says that she's going to, you know, just do something to the potted plant. It's not going to hurt. It's just going to tickle him a little bit. And she goes to start cutting him, and he starts laughing as though it's tickling him to, you know, make whatever potion she's making to turn the other guy into food.
She makes a smoothie.
A smoothie for him, yeah, to drink. And then, you know, and then we cut back to the family getting back to the house, which leads to one of my best scenes, is when the father confronts the boyfriend and Holly, and he gets all mad, like, "Oh, are you with him, blah, blah, blah?" And he goes, "Well, no, sir, I love," like, whatever. You know, I'll be with her, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, "Well, the only way to prove that is to either can stay here with your friends or you come up to the cabin with me in the car." And then he goes away, and friend number three is like, "Dude, what are you doing? Where are you going?" And then he completely abandons them without a really good explanation.
The father's not a very good negotiator either.
No.
Like, "You either stay here or you come with me." Obviously, what other choice would there be?
Yeah, he's not very good on the reading between the lines.
He's not very good at anything in this movie.
Nope.
He does nothing of importance.
And then you get to
except looking like Aaron Eckhart.
And you get back to the house, and when they get there, all the cars from everybody in town is there, but yet the only one freaked out by this is the little boy. Everybody else seems like, "Oh, the whole town's here and they're singing and dancing with us. Yeah, it's a good time. How you doing? Nice to meet you." You know,
it's a very awkward scene.
Yeah, and then the little boy summons Seth again, trying to figure out how to stop them from eating, because they, you know, he knows what's going on. Grandpa Seth comes in, and their plan is to throw a Molotov cocktail into the house while Grandpa Seth distracts him with a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, Grandpa Seth coming back from the afterlife, and he's packing heat. Is that something that they hand out in purgatory, I guess, or wherever he was?
Yeah, yeah, or hell.
The preacher says that Grandpa Seth is in hell.
He probably is.
Yeah. And then the preacher, funny. The preacher is apparently a wizard as well, or
is that really?
Yeah.
Did they say that?
This is sort of where the movie falls apart.
Yeah. Yeah, where all of a sudden he summons Seth back to hell. And then as right before Scarepa Seth disappears, he does a magic spell, whatever, thing that sends a lightning bolt that sets the Molotov on fire, that sets the preacher on fire.
Right.
And then the little boy is just out there, you know,
And no one questions this. Like, no one comes out and, what the hell happened? They just kind of look at the preacher burning.
And then the father runs and grabs fire extinguisher, puts the preacher out. And then apparently being set on fire is what turns them back into goblins. Because after the fire is put out, you just see a goblin carcass on the ground. Where it's just like a darkened goblin. You know, yeah. Not even like burnt
or
charred up. It's just a darker version of the other costumes.
And then the townsfolk just kind of stare at them, very mean looking. Yeah. They don't do anything to them. The family's in the middle, and they're like mean mugging them, like instead of grabbing them and killing them, we're gonna stare at you very intently.
We find out later that's because they want them to eat the food to purify their bodies, so they can eat them, which is why he tosses them the thing of sandwiches.
Right. He's got the burlap bag.
Eat these sandwiches.
Or else we're coming in.
Or else we're coming in to kill you violently.
They have like a standoff.
Yeah. And then they do a seance, which Holly brings up like as a joke. Like, what are we supposed to do, a seance?
Concentrate harder.
And then the brother's like, you're a genius. And then they do the seance.
And in the seance, Joshua, the little boy, he switches bodies with a goblin. And I don't think that's how seances work, usually.
No.
At least in any movie I've seen.
Yeah, but this is where Grandpa Seth gave them the classic video game countdown clock and said, you only have 10 minutes. When the clock strikes 6, I am gone forever.
That's right.
I'm never coming back. So after the seance gets done, which, again, all they did was hold hands, lift them up, and Joshua yelled, concentrate harder. That's all they did. And then the grandfather appeared, swapped places with the goblin. And then the goblins start chasing the family around this house, somehow teleporting throughout the house, the goblins. And they do multiple scenes of kicking the goblins down the stairs, which show off how terrible the costumes were.
They're not very good.
Yeah, when they get to the bottom. And then this leads to the one part that I caught as a blooper, is one goblin comes running down the hallway at Holly, and, like, as he's about to attack her, they cut to her, like, behind the goblin, and she's, like, laughing as it's about to hit her. And then she fights it off, and then she's still got a smile on her face, and then they cut away. And I'm wondering if she just couldn't keep it together as this goblin in this terrible costume came running at her.
She just had enough.
Yeah, she's just like, this is ridiculous. I can't look at this seriously, this situation.
Yeah, we're done here.
Yeah, and then they fight off the goblins, and then they switches back to the little boy, and the grandfather helps him. We skipped friend 3. Dying because the witch turned into a beautiful witch by praying to the Stonehenge. Interrupted the TV, got him to come outside, and then went inside and with a ear of corn in her hand, seducing him with that. And then when they go inside and she goes to hand them the corn while doing a very graduate style foot up on the bed with the pantyhose on. And goes, are you hungry? And he goes, well, I like popcorn. Or something like that. And then apparently, you're meant to believe that an ear of corn in that state can turn into popcorn miraculously. And then instead of,
Through the magic of witch sex.
Yeah. Apparently, you can't tell if they're having sex or they're just, you know.
Oh, he gets it in. Yeah. He gets it in.
Yeah.
It's assumed.
Yeah, and just... And then all of a sudden, all this popcorn comes out of nowhere and fills most of the trailer and on top of him. And then he still has half an ear of corn in his mouth when they cut back to him because she runs out because, going back to Grandpa Seth and Joshua, they're trying to reverse the thing with the stone. And so she starts losing the beauty and all that as the stone is getting transformed. So she goes running back. To the church, and at this point, the the grandfather had given him a backpack and told him to use it, you know, when the time comes.
Like you would expect it to be this awesome, mystical weapon. Or like,
yeah, but like it's not. We'll get to that.
And I was like, it's going to be something completely ridiculous.
And it was worse than that. So the grandfather clock strikes six. He disappears, and then all of a sudden that means there's not enough power to reverse the stone. The witch comes in, starts fighting him. She screams a little bit, and then that makes the goblin summon back to her through a teleport. They're all in a group about to kill the family, and they go, "Our queen needs us," and then sort of just disappears back.
Yeah, they vanish.
Yeah, and then they pop in, and then they're surrounding the boy. They capture him, and she's about to feed him something, and at this point, he reaches into the bag and pulls out a double bologna sandwich, and he goes to start eating it, and they're all repulsed by it. And that gives him enough time to run to the stone hedge to put his hands on it. And the family shows up just at that time. And I guess through the power of positivity and putting their hands all on the stone, they start reversing the spell. And then the other way they keep him distracted is he throws the sandwich at them as they're holding on. And then, the power goes off. The goblins seemingly disappear. And then it cuts to the, there might be little things in here, but, we need to speed this up. Cuts to them driving back home from the town, and they have that look of, "We shall never speak of this ever again," sort of looks. And then all of a sudden everybody has to split off. The father's got to go back to work, to run by work for some reason. The girlfriend is Holly is apparently allowed to go off with the boyfriend to his house with no questions from either parent. And then the little boy and the mother stay together, and they go in and they get she opens the fridge, and there's a whole thing of fruit in the fridge, which I never set. I mean, I may have had fruit in my fridge, but not like an entire glass vase full of apples just sitting in the middle of my fridge. And they missed a perfect opportunity with this, as we'll get to. So she starts eating the apple, asks him if he's hungry. He says, "No, I'm going to go to bed." And she's like, "I'm going to take a shower." And when she gets up there, he's playing with the train, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, hears a goblin voice, and eventually says something like, "Your mommy was tasty," or something. Oh, no, that's written on the ball. The softball comes down. And then he runs to the shower, and the shower's full of green jello. And then he runs around screaming, yelling for her. And then they find down in the most awkward prosthetic, Jell-O woman is on the table, to where they had to make sure to show it was a woman by giving her breast while she's laying there, being eaten. And he screams, and the guy goes, would you like to have some food, something like eat your mom or something like that, one of the goblins say. And then it cuts at that point. And I was really upset that they didn't do you knew something was going to happen because there's way too much time left in the movie. But they could have had her had green apples. And that would have been,
the one part of this movie.
Yeah, would have been perfect for... They hammered home at every other point in this movie about the green. And then it comes to the turning point. I guess they were trying to throw a curveball by making it red apples. Or that the goblins smarted their ways and no more green. So that's Troll 2.
It's all over the place.
Yep. Troll 2, it's a masterpiece, isn't it?
Yes.
In so many words, yes. this movie, it definitely lives up to its reputation as being terrible. I don't know if it's trying too hard to be good or trying too hard to be not good. It's like one of those things where it seems like it was trying to be serious, but then at times it knew not to take itself too seriously. So I don't know what the, I don't know what the goal was.
I think it very much falls into the category with The Room. I don't know if Anthony agrees.
Yeah, so it's directed and written by a couple of Italians. So there's definitely Lost in Translation stuff going on. So yeah, it's completely 100% serious.
Okay. I think, you know, I'm sure a lot of these actors and actresses, they were, you know, obviously people who were just trying to get into or break into the industry, and that clearly none of them have the chops. I mean,
so
have a much better, we're just better than that. Nice, with absolute certainty.
So what I think it was an open casting call in Utah. So at least the lead, George Hardy, who played the dad, he was actually a dental student at the time.
Okay.
So he wasn't really even trying to be an actor. He just said, you know what, I'm going to just go on a casting call, see what happens.
And I think
according to Troll 2 trivia on IMDb, he beat out like 100 other guys in his audition.
They must have been awful, man. You're going to tell me there was no one better?
So it said, for his audition, all he did was act out his now famous "You Can't Piss on Hospitality" in front of 9 smoking Italians, none of whom understood English. George was told he got the role partially because the Italians loved the energy he put into it.
And to be honest, he's not a bad looking guy. Like I alluded to earlier, he kind of looks like Aaron Eckhart.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that had to do something with it. You know, like, oh, you know, he probably looks good on camera, and he put energy in, and yeah, that's about it, I guess.
Yeah, and I said to you guys about the actress that plays Holly, that if she would have been born 5 years earlier, she could have had a lot of, you know, background roles in 80s high school movies. You know, just playing like friend 2 or friend 3 of like the popular girls, or, you know, Molly Ringwald's nerdy friend, you know.
I can see that.
You know, just because she had that very plain, like cute, but not anywhere spectacular look.
She could have been the Judy Greer of her time.
Yeah. Essentially. Yeah, just sort of there. And,
yeah.
You know,
has a few lines.
Just being someone's friend.
Yeah.
But, you know, at this point. And then, yes, when you looked on the IMDb page, it took her 6 more years to get another acting role.
I'm surprised she wanted to do acting after this, to be honest.
She did a bunch. She ended up in Ice Spiders, which is a great sci-fi movie, sci-fi original movie, about, you know, as it says, ice spiders.
Yeah, it's in the title.
It's in the title.
Yep. You get what you see.
Yeah, these aren't ice scorpions, you know, it wasn't like Troll 2.
I wonder if that's what she had to ask every time she went on an audition. Like, all right, so there's spiders in this, right? It's not like lizards or something crazy. No, it's spiders.
Yeah, so, but,
yeah. Okay, so where does this rank in terms of the movies we've done?
Easily the worst. Easily the worst.
Worse than Skyscraper.
Worse than Skyscraper, because now Skyscraper has nudity above it. that automatically knocks. It's not, to me, it's not even a close second. It's like, this movie is by far the worst we've seen.
Yeah, everything else you could match up with it, they both have, except for the nudity. They have the great single line, you know, the Sunday mornings in the park or whatever line that Nicole Smith delivers.
That's
and
the thing.
And piss on hospitality line.
With Skyscraper, like obviously Anna Nicole Smith was horrid. She was terrible. Nothing redeeming about her acting. But there were other people, other actors in that movie who were like you could tell, okay, well, they at least have some semblance of what they're doing. In Troll 2, there's zero acting. Yeah. These people, it's like this is the first time anyone's ever done it.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to knock these people because, like you said, it's probably open casting to whoever. It doesn't matter. So a lot of the lines are just read poorly, and that, I think that's being pretty nice about it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it gives you a good laugh. The like, oh, they're gonna eat me! Oh my god, that piss on hospitality. There's definitely some funny lines, yeah, but it's not meant to be funny.
Right.
Yeah, and you don't have to subtweet them, Dan. You can just say that Malibu was one of the good actors in Skyscraper.
He's up there. And I'm not even being facetious. He's probably one of the better actors in that movie.
Yeah, I enjoy Troll 2 more than I enjoy Skyscraper, nudity or otherwise. Obviously, I've seen Troll 2 more times now than Skyscraper. If you guys ever do get a chance to watch Best Worst Movie, it's a pretty interesting watch. It kind of follows around the main actor, and it's kind of like endearing, I would say, and just like to see how when he gets introduced to this whole cult status phenomenon of this movie, because he's still like a small town doctor. He's like, everybody knows his name. He's like the friendliest guy in town and everything like that. And then
that's got to show you something, where we're ragging on this guy for this movie and he's a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
He and came he's out like, okay on the end.
Yeah. I think he's got a pretty good life. But it's funny because like there's one part of the movie, once he realizes that it's a cult following, he wants to like bring a screening to his town. So he sets a whole screening up and is like, and nobody gets it. Like nobody's in on like the cult status joke of it. Like, you know, cause,
oh.
So like everybody goes to see it and they're like, oh yeah, it's good, George. Good job.
He probably should have explained, wait, you know, this movie's terrible.
Yeah.
I did a documentary about how bad it is, and it kind of gained a little bit of a cult following and kind of put everyone in on it.
The one thing with this and in terms of ranking and all that is I would probably put it Skyscraper below it. I just couldn't, but it didn't make me hate myself like Ernest Goes to School.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that movie actively made me hate myself.
You guys are harsh on Ernest, man.
I will never watch Ernest Goes to School ever again.
I don't know why, but...
And it's probably my liking is that I do watch The Room anytime I see it pop on, you know, or if it comes up on, like, a recommendation or anything when it used to run on... It used to be on Netflix, right, before?
Yeah.
The Room, so, you know, whenever... I didn't want to talk out of school and just think I was just... watching it illegal streams, but anytime it would pop up on recommendations, I would watch The Room. So maybe since this falls into that category, you know, I can see why, you know, I would like this a little bit more than probably. I don't know where you fall on those type of movies, Dan.
I was gonna say pretty soon, you know, we're gonna reach the point where it's kind of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe where everyone keep like, all right, what's your top five Marvel movies? So pretty soon we're going to have to, like, oh, you know, we're going to have enough of a sample size where we can say, all right, let's do our top five and our top 10. But
sounds like a great idea, actually.
Yeah, it's got to be done.
Like, sounds like end of the year material.
It does. I think we just discovered one of our next podcast ideas. But, I think you guys are pretty harsh on Ernest. I wouldn't put that anywhere near the worst that we've seen. I don't know. I guess I kind of have a soft spot for Ernest. And Will Sasso's in it. I like Will Sasso. But, I kind of respect movies. Like, what do we call it? The Pootie Tang effect, right? It's a movie so bad that it circles the spectrum. And comes around good. So, like, this movie is so bad that it's good kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
definitely. This is something that is meant to be watched how we did it. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, you're fucking exhausted, and it's just, you want to have a good laugh.
And it definitely filled that void for us that night when we were like, oh, what are we going to watch?
Yep.
Like, oh, you haven't seen Troll 2 yet. All right, we're watching Troll 2.
Yeah, we had just finished our D&D one-shot, the horror one-shot, which was beautifully ran by Anthony. And
yes.
Mark and I and my wife, Jen, we did a fantastic job. Everyone did. It was a lot of fun. So, you know, Jen and I stayed
the night. But not Tom.
But not Tom. Tom did he was the Troll 2 of D&D. Everyone did fantastic. It was a lot of fun. So, you know, everyone had gone and Jen and I were staying the night. So we figured, how are we going to wind down? And we figured we'd watch a horror movie. So we were kind of looking through everything, and I am terrible at making decisions. And
we find that out in one shot as well.
Yeah, she was going to tear my head off if I didn't make a decision. So Anthony made the decision for us, and it was Troll 2. And we were going to watch it eventually, so.
Right.
Might as well get that out of the way. And this movie felt like it was 5 hours long.
It does. It feels really long for a movie that's about 92 minutes.
It felt so long. I couldn't believe it. I'm like looking at the clock. It's like, 4 o'clock. Didn't we start this movie at like 2? What is going on right now?
Yeah, it does feel longer than it is, but yeah, I guess that's it for all we have to say for Troll 2. So I guess we're going to get right into They Call This Trivia Contest.
Yeah.
So this week we're going to do it again. We're going to do horror movie questions. 10 questions rather than do round robin or snaking, as we've figured out that snaking doesn't work when there's 10 questions. we're just going to go one and then the other.
Okay.
So who went first last time?
I think I did.
Okay, so we'll start first with Mark.
I can't wait to listen back and hear if, like, at some point I started 4 times in a row. Because we all forgot who started first.
It's entirely possible.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mark.
Yeah.
Once again, 10 questions, all horror movies. Dan, you'll be able to steal if he does not get this question right.
Oh, I plan on it.
Okay. Your first question. Before it was called Halloween, what was John Carpenter going to call his 1978 classic slasher film?
I don't know. I'm going to go with something simple because I don't actually know the answer to this. Like Mask Killer or something like that?
That's incorrect.
No. Yeah.
Dan, can you steal?
The Shape?
No, that is what they called Michael Myers in the credits, but no.
That's what you do that.
Nope. The correct answer was The Babysitter Murders.
Oh, I've actually heard that before. Now that you mention it.
There you go.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So no one gets points for that.
Nope.
Next question is to Dan. All
right.
Dan, how many movies are in the Final Destination series?
6.
It's incorrect. Mark.
Yeah.
I think there's 5.
5 is correct.
Yes.
Damn it.
I was literally counting them while you were answering in my head.
Mark is in the lead. A rare lead for Mark Myers.
Sweating here. Sweating. Boy.
Okay. Next question is to Mark.
Yes.
Mark, which film in the Nightmare on Elm Street series features Freddy using a Nintendo Power Glove?
Okay, so we're looking late 80s. Power Glove would have come out. Say, it's not New Nightmare, is it?
Is that your answer?
Yeah, New Nightmare.
It is not.
Okay.
Dan, can you steal?
I think it's Dream Warriors.
This is incorrect.
Ah, it's the fourth one then.
It is actually Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Is that the fourth one?
That is the sixth one.
Oh, shit, I was way off.
So yeah, so you guys, you both guessed around it. Well, actually, no, Dream Warriors is three.
That's three, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I might have been closer.
You were one off.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just trying to do the time period in my head.
You're so bad.
You did not do it, Mark.
No, I did not.
Okay, it goes to Dan. Dan, in which city does The Exorcist take place?
Shit. Chicago.
Incorrect. Mark, can you steal?
Exorcist. So New Orleans?
This is incorrect.
Okay.
Now, if you read today's article, there would have been a hint in the article.
I did.
Because The Exorcist 3 features a cameo by Patrick Ewing, who went to college in Washington, D.C.
At Georgetown. Yep.
Yeah. I actually read the article. It was a good article. It makes me want to watch it.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mark, your question. In The Thing, there's an abandoned research facility the crew investigates. What country owned that abandoned research facility?
Knowing Antarctica, and I don't think you would give us an obvious one of those, I'm going to say Norway.
Norway is correct.
Yes. I knew that one too. God damn it, Mark.
Yeah, I was pretty sure it wasn't going to be easy enough to be like U.S. or England or Russia or something like that.
I thought you were going to say Russia.
Norway is the correct answer. Okay, Dan, you're losing 2-0 right now.
Yeah.
Make it back. Make it back, sir.
Mark's the winner.
Which movie did Jason finally don his famous hockey mask?
I think that's Jason 3, or Friday the 13th, Part 3.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th, Part 3.
Yeah.
So it's 2-1. All right, Mark. Mm-hmm. Which horror icon appears in an uncredited role as a reporter in Scream?
Robert Englund?
That is incorrect. Dan, can you steal?
Say the question one more time.
Okay. Which horror icon appears in an uncredited role as a reporter in Scream?
Horror icon. So it's not the actor, it's the actual character?
No. I'm looking for the actor.
Oh, yeah.
It's an iconic actor in the genre of horror.
Okay. Robert Englund would have been my guess as well. Is it Bruce Campbell?
No, Mark, you sound like you might have had
that's
an
who
idea.
I was going to say, Bruce Campbell. Because it popped
incorrect.
In my head that he would have been a good choice.
The correct answer is Linda Blair.
Oh.
Okay. I wouldn't have got to her for a little bit.
Me neither. How many questions do we have left?
Three more plus the tiebreaker.
All right. Okay.
All right. Dan, your question.
All right.
The main character in the original Troll shares its name with which famous literary character?
Jeez. Which famous literary character? I'm trying to think. Quasimodo?
Incorrect. Mark, can you steal?
Rumpelstiltskin?
Incorrect. The main character in Troll and his son are both named Harry Potter.
Oh. I didn't even think about that.
Really?
Harry Potter Sr. and Harry Potter Jr., 11 years before J.K. Rowling ever wrote Harry Potter.
She stole that person, it!
That person better be getting some royalties.
Okay. Mark.
I'm chickens.
Rosemary's Baby takes place in what famous New York location?
I don't 100% know the answer, so I'm trying to think if you're looking for an actual place or a...
I'm not looking for a neighborhood, okay, or anything like that.
It's an actual location.
It is a location.
Physical location. Okay.
Physical location.
It's not a theater or anything. I'm trying to think of New York locations that I know. I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to be really obvious and just say like Rockefeller Center or something.
Is incorrect.
Yeah.
Dan, can you steal?
Is a place or is it a building?
Is a place not a building? A building not a place?
Well, I didn't know if you're... I'm going to say Central Park.
Is incorrect.
Correct answer? Next,
yes.
Is it the Flatiron Building?
No.
Okay, good.
The answer is the Dakota Hotel.
Okay.
Do you know why that's famous?
I don't.
Mark, do you know why it's famous?
No, I...
That is where John Lennon was shot.
Oh, okay. So, is it near Central Park?
It's near Central Park.
So you're almost right, Dan.
Yeah. Well, as we found out on Saturday, Anthony is not a very forgiving host.
Well, Central Park is not the Dakota Hotel.
No. Right. I was just saying that you were...
Partially.
You're correct. A lot closer than I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a movie that takes place about 95% indoors, Central Park is not the right answer.
Right.
All right, so...
Okay, it's Dan's question. It's 2-1. Dan, your question.
If I don't get this, I don't win.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
What city does the original Dawn of the Dead start in?
The original Dawn of the Dead.
The whole movie mostly takes place in a mall, right?
Right.
But it takes place in a certain place from the beginning, in a city.
Nashville?
That is incorrect. Mark, can you get the answer to this one?
I'll just take a stab. Is it, by any chance, like Los Angeles?
It is not. And Mark?
Yeah, I won anyway.
Guess where it is, Mark?
Is it in Philadelphia?
It is Philadelphia.
Oh, that's, it starts with like the SWAT team going in the building, right?
With the SWAT team going in the building, and then the flyboy and the woman are reporters for a Philadelphia TV station.
Well, there's one question left, right?
This is it. That's the tiebreaker now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mark wins. Yeah.
Mark wins. Mark wins Skyscraper and this one.
Yeah. I'm just going to be... Yeah. I had no idea that's what... Okay. All right.
Yep. So now you know.
I know.
All right. Okay, you guys want to do the tiebreaker?
Yeah.
What is the adjusted gross all time for The Exorcist?
Oh boy, that's a good question. Is this closest?
Yeah, closest.
Going over.
Well, not necessarily not going over. Closest.
All right. Worldwide?
Domestic.
$250 million.
I'll go a little lower, but I might be completely off. I'll say like $85 million.
No.
No. Are we both way
adjusted
off?
adjusted for inflation?
Oh, okay.
The Exorcist is the highest grossing R-rated film of all time, with $943,326,200.
We were close, Dan.
So I win.
You win.
I'm closest to not going over.
So we tied.
Price is Right rules.
That's right, baby. Undefeated streak stays alive. Actually, I lost skyscraper.
I love that I won the trivia contest for the two worst movies that we may have seen.
These questions are so easy too. It's just we're so bad.
Yeah, I mean there's a couple that are like the troll question about Harry Potter, that would have been a guess regardless, but
yeah. And I would have never thought of anything after it. I was trying to think of like literary history characters that would have been connected to trolls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. And that one was probably the hardest question. But these were pretty easy.
They were. We're just not very good.
That's the whole bit of it.
I'm trying, guys.
No, it's fun that we get them wrong.
It's not you, it's us.
All right, so that's going to do it for They Call Us a Movie. Next, we're going to try and put one together for next week. It's going to turn around on us pretty quick, but we'll try and get one in, because it's a movie near and dear to our hearts. We love it so much. It is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
It's a good one.
So that should go up on Halloween, which is Wednesday, so we got to have that in mind, fellas.
It'll be a
Stranger Damies Day too.
Yeah, it'll be a very long podcast day.
Most wonderful time of the year.
Because I think the second half is longer than the first half. Ooh. Of the one shot.
So we're gonna come right at you with all these with all this podcast goodness on Halloween, which is perfect.
Yeah, but then you'll get to see us for 25 hours in a couple days after.
Yeah.
We're
not going to get enough of us.
Yes.
So that's going to do it. Anything you guys want to plug before we say our goodbyes?
Not tonight, no. I'm fresh out of plugs.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, basically, you know, my normal spiel, Stranger Damies every Wednesday. We're finishing up the one shot on Halloween, as we just mentioned. Talking to Strangers will air Friday in preparation for the, Extra Life live on video stream that we'll be doing Saturday, November 3rd. Starting 9 a.m. is the Extra Life stream. Probably going to be early in the stream for the for the Stranger Damies, just so we can all be at our best energy, even though sleep-deprived D&D would be kind of fun.
No, it wouldn't. I just get this fucking over with.
Yeah.
TPK.
Yep.
I attack that thing. It's a... That is a... Those are two dragons over there. For sure? Yeah.
Skip it. Moving on.
Yeah, so those are the things coming up. Like I said, the second episode is pretty long, but it's the fun end to the some great moments. You'll get to see a good piece of art for the article on the website for the second half. And then that's about it. I guess we're gonna have a whole bunch of stuff coming up late next week.
Yep, it's the busy season for us.
Yep.
You can get in touch with us. They Call This a Movie. It's available on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, basically anywhere you can get podcasts. We should be on there. I think actually the only exception is Spotify. The Main Damie podcast, which we haven't done in a couple of weeks, but we'll try and get back to that as soon as possible. That's a completely different stream, but you can get to it in the same exact places that you could. It's just a different stream. Just look for the Main Damie podcast. You should be able to find that. We're on Twitter and Facebook. Just got to search the Main Damie when we're there. On Gmail, if you want to send us a comment question, you want to have us review your independent horror movie, feel free and send us a line at themaindamie@gmail.com. I am at Aunt Delvec. Dan is at daquino122 on Twitter.
Yes, sir. Yep. Correct.
Mark is at offthemarktweet.
Yeah, just add one thing to your thing. If you want to send us any independent movie of any genre, you know, at least one of us would watch it and review it.
That's true, yeah.
So,
but it is horror movie season, so.
Yeah.
That's going to wrap it up for this episode. The director of Troll 2 is Claudio Fragasso. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony Del Vecchio telling Claudio Fragasso to go fuck himself.